welcome to another episode of the Ska Dads podcast. Once again, I'm your host. I'm running the show solo as usual, like it's been the last couple episodes, but I have a wonderful guest that's joining us today, Mr. Mike Brody. How's it going, Mike?
It's good. How are you doing?
You're our first comedian that we've had on the show, so that's pretty awesome. So why don't you just tell people about some of the stand-up and comedy stuff you do?
I've been doing comedy for 23 years. I live in Minneapolis. It's a great comedy town, one of the best comedy cities in the country. Maybe I'm biased in that sense, but I've been there a long time. It's always been really good. A lot of really funny people come from there. I'm full-time comic, like I said, doing it 23 years, and I've got a special online, like a dry bar special, and I got a couple albums on Rooftop/Blonde Medicine, and doing a podcast with my friend called Only You Would Think That. So like I'm keeping busy, and it's a great job.
Awesome. Yeah. I've checked out a few episodes of the podcast, and I checked out your special too. So
oh, right
it's
on.
Definitely. The podcast you do with, is it a comedian you do it with or a friend?
Correct. Yes. Jessie Campbell. Yep. She's a longtime friend of mine. And, it just kind of happened organically. And, we just have fun with it. We didn't want to do anything with too much of a theme, where every single episode is about potatoes or something. You know what I mean? We just wanted to be just us just shooting the, can you swear on this podcast?
Yeah.
Okay, totally. Shooting the shit. And having fun. So it's been good.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, it's doing comedy for that long. I'm sure you've seen a lot of changes, right? Like the way comedy is done now. It's everyone has a podcast, everyone has a YouTube channel. It's like
when I started I started when I was 22. So there wasn't even YouTube. So you literally would just mail a VHS to a booker. Wow. A lot of stuff had changed. There wasn't podcasts. At least not that I was aware of in 2000. So.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I'm really into, besides ska music, I'm also really into comedy. I'm also really into wrestling. Sure. And it seems like all these interests that people have, there's a podcast for it, right? There's probably 2 million comedy podcasts. If you search Spotify, Apple, whoever you use, if you search that, you can find almost every comic, every city. There's this, I'm sure it's hard, but it's also you're kind of making a brand, right? It's a way to market yourself.
Right. And that's why we it's not that I'm against it, but we don't want to have a podcast that's here's how you do comedy and here's what happened here. Yeah. Because it's been done. We just wanted to be funny, and just be entertaining and stuff like that. That was kind of the different thing that we did. But yeah, there's a ton of really good podcasts about how to do it and stuff. But the other thing is that we live in Minneapolis, so there's a lot of New York stuff, there's a lot of LA stuff, and we wanted to represent the Midwest because there's a lot of really great stuff here. Just like American Scothic 1 and 2.
Yeah, there were a lot of bands from the Midwest in the 90s doing ska. Are you familiar with any bands in Minneapolis now that still play ska?
Not currently, but I knew there was a lot of 10 Cent Fun and Jinkies and a lot of stuff like that back in the day. Yeah.
Have you ever heard? My wife and I were listening to a Halloween podcast, a Spotify playlist the other day, and the Jinkies came on. And she's like that band name it was so random, but it's great. And the song was I think it was a cover of the Scooby Doo theme song. I don't know.
Yeah, that's appropriate.
Yeah.
Because the Jinkies is a. It's a Scooby-Doo reference, is it not?
Yeah. She's like, are they just called that because of that song? I was like, no, they have albums. They were a 90s ska band that did some stuff.
It's funny to me because one of my friends that I knew, so a comedian friend, his brother does fences. He builds fences. So I live in a house. We need to get a fence done. Hire this guy. He comes by. Turns out, I know him. He's my brother. And then turns out he was he played trombone and the Jinkies or 10 Cent Fun. I can't remember which one it was. But it's a small world, and you're like, oh, dude, I love ska,
Whoa.
Hey, Scooby-Doo, where are you? We've got some work to do now. Scooby-Doo, where are you? We need some help from you now. Come on, Scooby-Doo, I see you. Pretend you got a sliver. You're not. You know you got a mystery and something's coming in ready for you.
And Minneapolis is kind of like a fun, like, different city. It's kind of like, there's a lot of, I mean, there's a political movement there. There's also just a lot of activism in Minneapolis, but also it's kind of, it's kind of like an artsy town per
yes.
se, right?
Which yeah, mean? Absolutely. There's, you know, there's always any kind of art you want, theater, music, comedy. It's always top notch. And I say this sincerely, this is not me, poking fun. There's, Hazelden, the rehab center there. And so people come from all over the country to get clean. And then they stay. A lot of people stay because they like it. And like, in my opinion, people, a lot of addicts are very artistic people, you know? And I think that actually adds to the quality of the town. Like a lot of former drug addicts that are here and just creating art. So I think that has a lot to do with it. Plus it's cold. So I think people have to like really entertain themselves, you know? So yeah. I think that has a lot to do with it. But I love it. I live here by choice. I can live anywhere I wanted to, you know? So
yeah. Yeah, we actually have had two people from Minneapolis on the podcast. So you were like the third person from Minneapolis we've had. There's a band from Minneapolis called the Prize Fighters. They're like a modern band. They do a lot of like more like traditional ska, a little bit of like skinhead reggae stuff. But they're active in Minneapolis, but I think they only play like maybe three or four times a year because there's not a lot going on. But they do a lot of stuff in Chicago too sometimes.
Yeah.
But you should definitely check them out. We had them on the show, and the guy Aaron, he's their lead singer and guitar player, songwriter, and he's pretty active. He DJs too a little bit, and his girlfriend DJs as well. Her name's Joanna. But yeah, we've had both of them on. She talked about fashion, and Adam talked about you know, we interviewed him for his latest release that came out. So you should definitely check them out. Yeah. So what's your ska connection as a comedian and stuff? How did you get into ska like in the 90s? Like what was that connection?
I got into like underground music, you know, like basically in 1994, a friend of mine handed me a New York City hardcore The Way It Is comp, you know, like New York hardcore. And I couldn't believe it was real. I thought it was fake. Like, I thought he actually made it to fuck with me. Because I didn't understand that, like, it wasn't like Pearl Jam or Nirvana. And I hated it at first, and then I ended up loving it. And then it just opened the doors to like punk rock and everything for that. So I remember the same guy gave me Operation Ivy. And I knew about him because they had like mentioned him in Kerplunk by Green Day, you know. And so yeah. I listened to it, and I was like, oh, knowledge is good. But I remember going to him and being like, that second song is weird. And he, it was Sound System. And I go, what is that? And he goes, oh, that's ska. I got obsessed, and I got a bunch of zines, and I looked into it, and so I was like, all right, I want to get more ska. So I found this Moon Ska zine, and it seemed like the Toasters. I was like, the Toasters seem like they're a big band, you know? So I ordered it, you know, it was the 90s, so I had to write a check. It took a long time. It showed up, and I remember opening it up, and it was New York Fever by the Toasters, and looking at the pictures of them looking like maybe 35 to 40 with polka dot vests on. And I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't look like Operation Ivy. And I'd be like, really like, oh my God, what did I just buy? And, but I listened to it. I loved it. And that's one of my favorite albums to this day. So that was kind of my beginning of ska. And then I just got obsessed and I just got everything I could, you know, I got all the comps, which is a good way to open it up. And then, got into, you know, Buck 09, Barfly, Thumper was one. The Skanarchy comp was a big one for me. All that was, to this day, that's such a good comp. So many good bands I found out from that.
Yeah, Thumper, they were like a great, I think they're still active, and even the Toasters are still active. They've had a lot of like member changes, but Bucket.
I saw the Toasters singer. Like just before the pandemic, they played in Minneapolis, and they had Buford O'Sullivan playing with
yeah,
them.
Yeah, from the Scofflaws. Yeah, the Scofflaws are even still active. There's a big festival that happens in Virginia every year called Supernova Ska Festival.
Yeah.
And they had the Toasters play this year, the Scofflaws played. They even brought Bad Manners over from the UK. They're like a two-tone band from the late 70s, early 80s. We're on the two-tone label with the Specials. So it's crazy. And they even brought in a lot of international bands, like a band from Tokyo called the Tokyo Ska Paradise Orchestra. So it's crazy, like a lot of those things, like you mentioned, like the gateways people have. It's really funny to me because like Operation Ivy was a gateway band for me too. Like I was really into like punk rock in the mid 90s when I was in middle school, and got into ska pretty much a similar way. You find a band like Operation Ivy, Rancid, that kind of just like hooks you into it, and you're like, oh yeah, let me do some digging. Oh, they're covering this song. Especially like a band like, I think when I found the Specials, it was like realizing everything the Specials did were covers, and that just helped you kind of like, oh yeah, let me dig into that. And Moonska too was like a huge thing for me when I was in high school, because being I'm in Baltimore, DC area, we would a lot of the Moonska bands would actually play, like since we're like the halfway point between Florida and New York, a lot of those bands were in New York, so they would play on the weekends and just do like mini tours to Pittsburgh, DC, maybe Virginia, or even North Carolina, South Carolina, whatever. But it was we got a lot of opportunities. I was in a high school ska band back then, and we got to play with bands like the Scofflaws and the Toasters when I was 17, 18. So it was really cool for me. I even did like a zine about Moon Ska and just the ska scene in the 90s. But it's crazy how it's still active, and there's a lot of connections that people still have to that music. And you know, it's one of those things, like you get into ska and there were periods of time in my life where I just kind of like, I didn't follow it as much. I was busy with other things in life, like, and you take a break from it, but then you come back to it. And in 2023, it's like, it's still there. There's still a ska scene. You can still go see ska bands.
Yeah.
You know, the community is still there in a lot of ways too. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of connections, like being a comedian and like booking and the same thing the ska bands do. It's a DIY community, right? Like, are there connections? Like, do you have any connections to the ska scene through comedy, or is it kind of separated?
Not directly, but there's like a lot of musicians. A lot of times musicians will try their hand at stand up, you know, like, because, you know, they do like the crowd banter and they're like, oh, I'm gonna try it. So I have met people. I don't think I've met a ska person other than my friend who did the what do you call it, the Fence. But I actually, the other way, I tried joining a ska band because I had a saxophone. I played saxophone from third to eighth grade, and I went to go get it. My mom, I don't even understand how she did this, but she had nailed it to the wall as decoration, and she wouldn't let me take it off the wall because it was decoration. And then so I went around her back and I was like, I'm gonna take this, and I couldn't get it down. It was like permanently affixed to the wall, so that stopped me from being in a ska band in 1997.
Oh wow. But, dude, your mom, that sucks.
Yeah, she's like that. She had a trombone too. I have no idea. Maybe my mom was in a ska band and I don't know.
Yeah, she has a checkered past or something.
But you know what? The funny thing is, I actually think my entry point into comedy is because of ska. I went to college. I grew up in Iowa. I live in Minneapolis, right? But I grew up in Iowa, and I went to the University of Iowa, and there was this bar called The Green Room that was just had a lot of ska. It had a lot of punk and hardcore, but I mean, it was a lot of ska bands. This was like, you know, 98, 99, 2000. And I saw so many good. I saw Johnny Sacco there, Blue Meanies, just a ton of bands like that. And it was Buck 09. And so I don't drink anymore. I'm sober now, but I was drinking a lot in college. But I wanted to go up there and skank and do all this stuff, but I didn't want to hold a beer and have to be tied to that. So I ordered a Long Island iced tea, like a huge Long Island iced tea that has like seven different liquors in it. And then all of a sudden Buck 09 started early, or, you know, before I was ready. I was like, oh, so I chugged it. I just chugged this giant thing of liquor. And I'm watching the show and having a good time. And they go, does anybody, I think there weren't a lot of people there. There was maybe like 50 to 70 people there. And at one point he goes, you guys have any requests? And I go, Irish drinking song. And he goes, do you know the words? And I was like, yeah. And so he brought me up on stage, and I that Long Island just hit just right. And I went off, and I just, at one point I got the verses backwards, and I whispered to him during the song. I go, I think I got the verses backwards. And he's like, that's okay. Like, nobody cares. But people were going nuts, and like, everybody applauded for me. The opening band was Link 80. And it was their second singer, and he was like, hey man, like, that was really cool that you went up there. And then I was wasted at that point. I was like, oh, thank you. And he looked at me all funny because he was straight edge. But
we actually just had him. Well, the guitar player, one of the guitar players in Link 80, he was on the show. He's in a new band called Omnigon, who
nice.
They're excellent. But yeah, that's so funny, that little story, that connection. You just connected.
Right, and that was like, I got up on stage and I had that little, I was like, oh, that was the first time I was ever like, I like attention like this. Like, this feels good. So yeah. It planted that seed in me where I was like, I think I like being on stage. So that was Buckle
Did you, did, can I ask too, with the whole sober thing, did you become sober and then get into comedy, or was it, you know, something after?
No, I did 5 years. I was drinking, you know, I got sober when I was 5 years into comedy. So yeah, I definitely did it up on the road in the early days.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's just, I just wanted to ask that just because it's interesting to me. I see a lot of, in Baltimore, we have a little small comedy club called The Port that just kind of opened. I think it's been open for like 2 years now. And there's a lot of New York comedians that come down that we've gone to see, and just interesting. A lot of comics are just, you know, they talk about, you know, they're sober now, and they, you know, they're focused more on their career, focused more on things. It's just, you know, I've seen that connection in the last year, I guess, with a lot of comedians we've seen there. That just kind of mentioned.
There's
that.
You know, there's a lot of drunks and ex-drunks in comedy. You know, like, we're not really known for being even keeled. You know. You go one way or the other, you know, and it some people, I've been around long enough to, not to be judgy, but you see how it ends. So I'm not anti, you know, if people, I'm just an alcoholic. So if anybody can drink and handle it, good for them. That's great. I can't. So I've seen people who also can't handle it and how it ends up. And I'm glad I made the decision I did, but no judgment, of course.
Definitely. Yeah. I think that's you know, I think people have to decide what's good for themselves, and that's like kind of seems like the direction things are going in. I remember having friends that were like straight edge back in the day, and it was always that movement. If you're straight edge, you're like, you definitely have something you want to preach about. And but a lot of people, I think in 2023, they're like, you know, it's just that whole mentality of like, oh, I don't drink. And there's a lot more people. I mean, they even have bars they're opening now too that are like serving non-alcoholic drinks, like non-alcoholic bars. It's that whole movement.
A lot of Gen Z is not drinking like we did when we were younger, you know, and that's great. I couldn't imagine. I was all in. I grew up in Iowa. There wasn't a lot to do, but I think that's awesome. You know, I think they're taking a lot of
effort, I think for me, I've definitely cut down since having like a kid and just getting more career driven. I feel like, oh, I don't need to do that as much. Yeah. And then when you stop playing in bands, which I've done a few years ago, it's like, oh, I don't even really want to drink anymore. You just feel awful the next day anyway. So, you know, I think it's growing up too a little bit. I don't know.
At the time it felt like it was going to be tough, but now I can go listen to my Skankaholics Unanimous, or was it Skankaholics Unanimous?
Yeah. Old Moonsky. Yeah. That's a great compilation. Yeah, that's so funny. You have these little like ska connections too, and that was kind of helped you get into comedy. I was just going to ask you too. One of the things I've seen here that we've had in like around DC, we've had comics. I went to see Lars a few years ago, and he had a friend of his who owns I forgot what label he owns. He's the label that Rancid releases stuff on. I can't remember it right
Hellcat.
Now. No, it's like it's like the newer label trying to think. But anyway, the owner of that label, he's a comedian. So he opened up for Lars, and then this local band called the Pie Tasters from DC, they've had they play a yearly show, an annual show around the holidays at the 930 Club in DC. It's like a big event, and they had this guy Ian Fidance open up a few years ago for him. I've seen more of that like happening. So I don't know if you should try to get on some ska shows. I think it's fun for people to get a chance to see like comedians. I don't know. Do you have any like? could you do like a ska set? Like, do you have any, do you do a lot of ska jokes or any ska jokes?
I don't have any ska jokes, but yeah, I could. Yeah. I was, so like I said, I live in Minneapolis, and Dillinger Four, not a ska mm-hmm. band, punk band, is from yeah. Minneapolis. So they have like this annual D4th of July thing. And I got to do that as a comedian. So it was like Lifter Puller, Dillinger Four, Scared of Chaka, yeah. like all these really cool bands. And Tilt Wheel. And I went up, and it was towards the end of the night, and it was, a lot of it was outdoors, but I was indoors, and they were wasted. They were wasted. And I went up and I told one joke, like a joke. And then they were like, I don't even think they could pay attention if they wanted to. It was just a room full of drunk punks. And I just went off, like I just went off book, and I just started riffing on like punk shit. You know, like I started talking shit about Keith Morris's comb over dreads. You know, he's just trying to be bald.
Yeah.
I talk shit about Banner Pilot for some reason. I don't know why. They're all right. But I just went, I did like 30 minutes of just riffing on like punk and shit like that. And it killed. And I was like, this is what I've been waiting for my whole life.
Because this is your breakthrough. You know? you could be the punk comedian. Because they don't have, I mean, like there's nothing, no one out there doing that right
now. Because like during my regular set, I mean, what am I gonna do? I'm not gonna sit there and talk about like people barely know who the Clash is. You know what I mean? Like, you can't. But it was all there that whole time. So yeah, you know, that would be fun to open for a ska band.
It would. Yeah, well, I think the DIY community, like we were saying, like comedians, a lot of comedians are, you know, they're trying to market their brand. They're trying to push themselves. You guys do a lot of your own bookings. You know, so it's like, to me, it's such like the DIY community, like punk, that's in punk rock and ska and, you know, other kinds of music like that. It's just like everyone's kind of trying to work together to like sell themselves. I always like those experiences. For me, like if I go see a band, if it's a different, if it's all the same music from start to end, it all starts to kind of like blend together, you know, like I went to a surf festival one year in New Jersey, and it was like, it was so much reverb and it was in like an echoey hall, like the convention center in Asbury Park. And it was just like, by the, like the fifth band, I was like, my ears were like, I can't stand any more reverb. Like, and I love instrumental surf music, but it was like, oh my God, every band's covering Dick Dale. And every band has reverb up all the way, and there's no low end at all. I'm like, this is killing me, you know?
And that's what I miss about the 90s. I remember seeing a flyer for, it was Born Against and Avail and 10 Cent Fun. Like, it was a ska band and Born Against, who was like the opposite of ska. You know, that was always fun. That's what I loved about it, because it wasn't like ska versus other genres. It was like, it was all under the punk umbrella, even though, as you know, ska started in Jamaica, but you know, the punk ska stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it was all just mainstream versus the underground, you know?
Yeah. And there's a lot of like newer bands that I think are trying to blend that a little bit more. Like there's a record label called Bad Time Records, and they're more of a ska punk label, I would say, but they're trying to push boundaries a little bit, and they play with a lot of punk bands and do, you know, like they have it's like you go to one of their shows and all the bands are a little different. There could be like a mod punk band, a regular punk band, hardcore band, and then a band with horns. And it's just like so much. Yeah. It's a lot of variety. So I think a lot of the newer bands are trying to figure that out too. That are coming along. So with your comedy and stuff, are you like a guy who does crowd work, or do you do jokes and you mix it up? How does that go?
I mix it up. You know, I never want to have to rely too much on one thing or the other. You know, so if the situation entails that I'm just telling jokes, like, then I'm just gonna tell jokes. But I can do a lot of crowd work. I like doing it. I'm it's and I have to pat myself back. I'm pretty good at it. So I do a lot of that, but if they don't have the attention span for it, then I'll move back to the joke. So I just kind of do whatever feels like the right thing. And I don't want to be a crowd work comic. I don't want to be just a joke comic. Like, I just want to be able to be versatile in that. So it is fun because people, when they see you doing crowd work and it's funny, it's really not fake or written, you know, like it's actually happening at the moment. They respect you. They don't come on anything. I was gonna say they come on board, but once they see like somebody says something and you just tear them apart, like you're golden from that point on. But you don't want people to heckle either, so it's kind of a weird dance.
Yeah. I've seen that. I've seen crowd work go over really well, and it's just like, to me, I'm watching a new thing I'd like to do when we go to this like small comedy club we go to. It's like you can see the comedians like their eyes like move, or like I can see them scanning the room, I guess you would say. It's just like, and like we usually sit up front, so sometimes, you know, they'll say something about us and sometimes they won't. But we went to a show, there was like no one there except like, it was a weekday show, it was a free show. It was someone's birthday, and this famous comic, he did some stuff on a Chappelle show. Tony Woods. I don't know if you've ever heard of
him. Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was like his birthday show, and we were the only ones there, and we were totally just the four people in the crowd. Two people. It was four of us, and then two other people in the crowd. So it was like six people total in the room, and they were just, every comedian was just like relentless on us because we were the only six people there, and it was like. And we all it was during the playoffs, so we all had like Orioles shirts on, so they were like asking us if we were like all related. It looked like we were playing like Family Feud or something like that. It was just
six people. I mean, it's clubs will cancel the show if it's less than 15, and there's kind of a reason for it, which is that, you know, it's not always the best commercial for the club because it can go really wrong with that. But I did a show once where there was four people there, and they made us do the show, and they were like the best four people that have ever lived. And then the next night, we had eight people, and I was like, oh, this is going to be twice as good. But no, it was a piece of shit. It was what eight people should be, you know, at that point. But that is, you gotta keep going. But you know, when there's six people, you also don't want to punish them for being the only people that showed up. So there's good natured. Yeah. I if somebody starts shit, I'll throw down, right? But overall, if I'm doing crowd work, I'm trying to be... I'm a friendly guy, you know. I'm not trying to make somebody feel like shit. I saw the Nutty Professor with Eddie Murphy when I was a kid, and he made fat jokes, and it made me sad. So I don't want to do that.
So you talked about, who are some of your influences? Like, what made you? I know you talked about, you know, going to that show with Bucko 9 and getting up on stage, and that was something that gave you that adrenaline boost. But like, how did you stumble on to comedy? Because I always feel that like that is so like interesting, because it's not something most people want to do or choose to do.
I didn't even think about doing stand up until a month before I did it. It never crossed my mind. But when I decided to do something, I just do it. You know, I grew up in Iowa, and I always watched MTV's Half Hour Comedy Hour, Evening at the Improv, Comics on the Road. I watched all that shit religiously. But it never even occurred to me that I could be a stand-up comic, because I'm from Iowa and they don't let us have dreams, you know, or tell us that we can. So it just never occurred to me. And then I was in college, I was bartending, and the regular came in, and he was like, oh, I did an open mic and I killed, which who knows if he did or not. But I remember being like, I'm funnier than that motherfucker. Because I had been writing for a newspaper, and I wrote funny stuff, you know, like at least I thought was funny. So I was like, I went to go do it. So where I started, you can only do the open mic once a month. That's all they had, was once a month. So I went in the next day, and I just kind of cased the joint to see like what I was going to begin into. And it was, I mean, this is like 2000 in Iowa. They were crazy people. Like, it was just crazy people doing it.
I can imagine.
Like, a woman with a vacuum just kept saying Elmo, Elmo, Elmo on stage. Like, and so I was like, well, I can do this. And I did do it. I was immediately the best open micer in the state. Not because I was some genius, but they were so bad that it was just by default, you know? So I got a lot of confidence because, like, I could string a sentence together. And then I got that buzz that you get from doing stand up, and because I packed the room out with 50 people from my bar, and I was like, oh man, I'm never gonna stop doing this, and I never did. But your friends stop showing up after a while, and then you gotta learn how to do comedy for real. you know, yeah. easy to kill. Yeah, when you get,
it's just like a band. I mean, it's just like a band, right? Like when a band starts, like you have like the first 6 months, all your friends want to come and see you, and then after 6 months, you're like, oh, we need a following.
We need
people that show up that actually want to be here that aren't friends of ours. That you know.
Yeah, but I started. Yeah, one of the guys that Brooks Whelan, he started a little bit after me, but he was in that Iowa scene with us, you know, and so it was fun. There were some funny people, but it took a bit.
How much touring do you do? Like, do you do most of your stuff in state, or are you kind of jumping all over the place? Or?
All over, you know. I do clubs, I do colleges, I do cruises, I do corporates, like company events and stuff like that. So wherever it takes me, wherever they're paying me, you know, it's I mean, it's my job, and it's fun, obviously. But this week I'm going to Hawaii. I'm doing a cruise that goes to Hawaii, and then you know, yeah. So and then you know, around holiday times, I have a lot of stuff around the state because there are company parties and stuff like that. It's funny because you know when I started, I wanted to be the punk rock comic. You know, I wanted to get up there and be like so edgy that I, you know, blew everybody's minds. But you, after a while doing comedy, you start to realize you just have to be yourself. And like, I grew up with punk. I still love punk. I'm a music nerd. I still listen to Brand New punk and hardcore and ska and all that stuff. But like, I'm not by my nature the like, I'm gonna piss you off edgy guy. It's just not, it's just really not who I am. So the better I got at comedy, the basically instead of being a character, I just slowly became myself on stage. So, you know, it's
that's authentic, but, though. Like, people appreciate the authenticity, I think, of stand-ups. That's what I like to see. When I see a comic and they're, you know, playing like a character, I don't know. What comes to mind is like Andrew Dice Clay. Like he's not like that now, but like back in the day, like he had a character, right? Like that, he had a character, he had a persona.
Yeah.
But like that only gets you so far. Like,
well, supposedly, you know, the thing I love about comedy, and I'm sure it's just like music, is if I don't know everybody in the comedy industry, I know somebody who knows them. Like very few. There's a lot of open micers, which is not a knock against that term is a literal thing. Like people who go to open mics, you know, maybe they're semi-professional, but there's open micers. There's really famous people, really famous people, Chris Rock. And then there's the middle class of comedy, which is actually quite small. The people who aren't famous, who make a living doing comedy, it's quite small. So a lot of us know each other, you know? So
yeah.
I knew somebody who knew Andrew Dice Clay back in the day, and they're like, yeah, it was a put on. And then like eventually they're like, oh, it became real. Like he started to become that guy after a while, you know?
It's just like wrestlers too, right? Like they start out as characters and then you start living the character. It's like, you know, totally.
I worked with Emo Phillips. You ever heard of Emo Phillips?
Yeah. Yeah.
He is like that.
Have you done a lot of stuff on the East Coast in New York and Baltimore, D.C.?
Yeah. I was just in D.C. I did shows. I did where was I? It was in a hotel. I can't remember what it was called, but it was a hotel downtown. And it was actually my wife and I went on vacation to D.C. And then I was like, oh, I should do shows while I'm here. So I just talked to people that I knew from DC. Like I know like Tim Miller and John Conroy, who are comics from DC, and they hooked me up. So it was a lot of fun.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I can send you some of my contacts. I know in Baltimore, I was telling you that club, I don't know if you've heard of that club, The Port, but they've been getting a lot of, you know, kind of like a lot of New York people, but also a lot of local people that they're kind of trying to like create like names for themselves. But I like going there during the week because you have a lot of like, you know, they have a lot of different open mics. And then on the weekends they have like headliners from out of state. So
nice. Yeah. It's I put a lot of miles on my car, you know, and I'm flying more now, but like my last car, I put on 350,000 in like a few years. And my wife made me, she made us sell it. And I was like, it's still good. Like it didn't break down, but like, you know, when you get to 350, you're pushing it, you know, you're pushing it.
So do you have, besides your hometown, like, well, I know you mentioned Iowa, you started out in like the Iowa comic scene and you're in Minneapolis now. Like, do you have a favorite city or place like that's away from your home that you always do well in? Is there one location or that you just always kill?
Madison, Wisconsin, believe it or not, is a great town. It's a college town. They have a great comedy club there, a comedy club on State. That is always a really fun one to do. That one is just like, if you don't do well there, you should just quit comedy. it's just right there. That's a beautiful town, beautiful club. So I always like doing that, and it's nice because it's not that far. It's only 5 hours away from where I live.
Yeah,
so it's not far at all.
And then have you done Hawaii before? Is this like you've
never been to Hawaii? So this one, I'm doing a cruise where I start and then I go. It's 5 days there, and then once we get there, I fly home, and they continue on. So I'm only gonna have like half a day to see Hawaii. Yeah.
Oh, wow. But hopefully you get some time to enjoy it.
Yeah, those things are fun too, man. I mean, like, it's not like the cruises aren't like they were in the 80s where it's all blue-haired people by a salad bar, you know? Like when I do comedy on a cruise, it feels just like a comedy club, you know? It's just like it, so I have a good time.
That's awesome. Well, you mentioned a lot about, like, listening to music, and you're still a music fan. I see, is it behind you? Is there a Ramones? Is that a Ramones thing?
Yeah. A friend of mine, did that for me.
Oh, nice. He said, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's Joey Ramone in front of the Ramones logo. Yeah. And then I got a bunch of music books. Like, I got the whole library here. I got my New York City hardcore. I don't know if that's reversed the way it is.
No. Yeah, I can see it. Yeah.
Yeah. I love music, man. I'm obsessed with music. And
So what's some hardcore stuff or punk rock stuff you're listening to now? Like, is there any newer bands or new albums that you've been into recently? Or
yeah. Let me see. What am I listening to right now? There's a hardcore band called Buggin, B-U-G-G-I-N. I like them. Let me see. I go blank. Mind Force. you know, there's. Let me see what else. You know what? I have it right here. There is. You know what? A lot of people don't like Turnstile right now because they say they're selling.
I was asking if you were going to mention them because when people talk hardcore new stuff, it's like they're like, I think they're local to Baltimore actually too. Yeah. I think they're from.
No, they're great. I grew up in the 90s. What listened to hardcore? Like people like Civ. There were bands that were like Civ got played on MTV. You know, like I don't know.
And it was the dude from the Gorilla Biscuits, right? In Civ, wasn't it?
Yep. Quicksand. Angel Dust, Fever Child, Ankle Biter, Waste Man, Phantom Bay, Fiddlehead, Mil-spec, military gun, arrival note. I love it. Drain is a good one. I have a list of all my favorite new ones to keep track. Spy, gel, restraining order. Yeah, a lot of hardcore. I've been listening to a lot of hardcore lately. But I also listen to like Jason Isbell, Tyler Childers. I don't know if it's Childers or Childers. Incendiary, Jerome's Dream. Yeah, there's a new Sam I Am. Like, I like Show Me the Body. They have a banjo. That's kind of weird.
Yeah. I always think like people's music taste, it kind of, you know, there's a lot of things. I listen to a lot of stuff. I do a ska podcast. So people like, I listen to ska nonstop. Well, now if you look at my Spotify playlist, and having a daughter and I'm a teacher as well. So I feel like I get exposed to music through like other places as well. So like, I'm in the car and my daughter is always like asking me to play Taylor Swift songs. And so I expose myself to a lot of top 40 stuff too, sometimes what other people are listening around me too. So,
well, that's good, man. But there's always good music being made, you know, like I never want to be that person like, oh, it peaked in 1997. Like, that's stupid. Yeah. You know, I think Jeff Rosenstock put out the best ska album in the last 20 years.
I've seen him live a few times, and have you seen him live or anything?
I have not.
Yeah,
that's the problem with being a comic, cool. Is people will be like, oh, did you see this band? I'm like, I'm always working, I'm always on the road. So like the minute I started doing comedy, my going to shows ratio went way down. But I do my best. I just pray for Tuesday shows.
That's how you need it. You need to get yourself on some festivals and shows so you could be like, oh yeah, I have seen this band, I opened up for them, or they opened up for me. You know, that's the route to go, it seems.
One of my friends got offered to do the Gathering of the Juggalos and he turned it down, and I was like, what's wrong with you? That is the best story ever if you do that. And he's like, it doesn't pay enough. I go, I will pay your gas, I will pay whatever you need.
I just saw the one guy from ICP. I was never into them at all. Like, they were not my cup of tea or anything, but my brother was really, we went in opposite spectrums in high school, but he was really into them. And the one guy I saw him on, I don't know if it was something maybe related to like that Skanks Fest thing, or maybe it was an interview on some Sirius XM and he was on Howard. It was something, I don't remember what it was. But I saw him singing and he was just freestyling. I was like, dude's not a bad singer. It's just the makeup and the whole like attitude of that. But I'm sure opening or playing that Juggalo Fest would have been crazy. Like just
to do it for the story. But
definitely.
It was too late. I remember being in a car, before cell phones, somebody driving us to a party, and I heard this song, somebody rapping like turkey, chicken, turkey, turkey, chicken, turkey, chicken. And I remember being like, catalog this in your head, because I need to know whatever this stupid shit is. And like 15 years later, I heard it and I was like, and I shazammed it, and it was Insane Clown Posse. I was like, of course it was. Switches and a drop top, low ride tractor, redneck fella, moonshot seller, hanging by his neck bone, chicken bones locked in the cellar, bella, belly chicken plucker, the redneck fucker.
And they even had a wrestling division going for a while too.
Oh yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
They spread out everything.
I was doing a show. So one of my home clubs is in the Mall of America, the House of Comedy. It's on the fourth floor of the Mall of America, and they had wrestling in the rotunda. And they're not supposed to make noise after a certain time because of comedy and other things.
Yeah.
You couldn't hear comedy; you could only hear wrestling. And I went out there, and it was like two clowns wrestling, and I posted it. Like, I was pissed, you know? And somebody's like, oh, that's the Insane Clown Posse's group. It wasn't them. It was like their managers or something. I don't know. But yeah, there's a whole industry of clown rap, clown wrestling, clown maid service, I guess. Like, they're hitting that's everything. Crazy. Good for them. But just don't fuck with my show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's really funny. Like, just to see, have to compete with that, you know, like what do you do in that situation? Right. Do you know, like that's a tough scenario. Well, what's the best way for people to kind of like stay in touch with you? If they want to check you out, is it your Instagram? Is that probably the easiest place, or website?
Yeah, there's a couple ways. Well, you can go to my website, mikebrody.com. It's got linked to all my socials. It's got linked to my podcast. It's got linked to videos and all that stuff. But on social medias, it's Mike Brody Comic. So MikeBrodyComic. So
Sweet. Yeah, I found you. It was so random that I was looking up comedians and I just stumbled upon your Instagram page, and that's kind of how I discovered you. And I saw you had a podcast and saw a couple posts about ska. So I was like, I really wanted to have you on this episode and have an interview with you. So thanks so much for doing this, Mike. I really appreciate it. Yeah.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, can you kind of plug, what was the name of the podcast and everything?
Podcast is Only You Would Think That, with it's me, Mike Brody, and Jesse Campbell, and we have a killer theme song that I paid this guy to do. It's not ska, but it's got an island feel to it, so it's kind of like,
oh, nice,
calypso, hip-hop kind of thing, and it turned out really good. I was really shocked. Not that I didn't expect it to be good, but it was better than it's a dope theme song. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. So do you have a couple of like maybe a top three ska songs that would kind of, if someone's like, what's your top three ska songs? Would you have three you could maybe list
off? Man, that's so hard because it's like first wave, second wave, third wave. Yeah, yeah. You know. All right, first wave. My favorite ska song is "Get Up a Dinah" by Desmond Dekker. Cause that one's really fast. That's just like a banger. It's super fast. For second wave, I mean, the Specials. How do you go wrong with the Specials? I think Angry Woman Married Woman, Married Man. That one.
It's called Stupid Marriage.
Stupid
right?
Marriage. Stupid Marriage. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I remember driving around with a girl in my car that was somebody else's girlfriend, I think, and playing that song. She's like, "You listen to weird music," and I was like, "It's not weird." And he's like, "Order. Yeah. My name is Judge Roughneck." I'm like, "Okay, it's a little weird."
Quarantine session. Wait a minute, oi, Mr. Quarantine session. Order. My name is Judge Roughneck, and I will not tolerate any disobedience in my courtroom. Rude boy, you have been brought in front of me and charged with smashing this woman's window. Before I sentence you, what have you got to say in your defense?
I was walking down the street one night when I saw her silhouette in a bathroom light. Her way of life, baby, nothing to hide. With the frosted glass, shattered curtains open wide.
Oh man, and then for third wave, I mean, geez, I mean, there's so much that I love. You know, the one that I think is really underrated is Wailing Paddle by the Rudiments. That was on the split with the Suicide Machines. I really love that one.
And they were one of those old school
Suicide Machines before they were on the major label, because I used to tape trade with people all over the country. Yeah. And this guy from Detroit, which is where they're from, sent me Jack Kevorkian and the Suicide Machines. And I remember, I thought they sucked. They kind of did suck at first, like demo era, and then they got a little bit better, and then their major label one, they just went nuts, and they were awesome.
Cruel.
Yeah, the guy Jason Navarro, he's the singer in the band. He has a really cool like more of like a reggae type band called Jay Navarro and the Traitors. I'll send you their stuff if you want to check them out.
Yeah.
But they're more like smoother like reggae, and they do a couple different things, but then they also have some like really cool like punk rock bridges on their songs. You're like,
I gotta check that out, because he was in Hellmouth too, which is like a metal band.
Yeah,
so he's doing it all. I liked it like when I was younger too, but I think now that I'm like in my 40s, I really dig Jamaican stuff a lot. Like the old Jamaican ska is just really good.
Yeah, I'm a DJ, so I have a lot of that old stuff I've collected over the years from like some of the original records from the 60s. You know, there's a lot you can do to keep them clean and like restore them. Like I just bought a couple records from my buddy in New York, and he's like, yeah, I bought these, I cleaned them up, and it's like, oh man, you cleaned them? That's even better. I'll definitely take them. So I just ordered some records from him. So that's always a cool thing. And
I got to ask you a question. Did you ever dress ska in the 90s?
Yeah, I think it was more in high school. Like I was never what I would call like a skinhead, but I definitely copied that style a lot. I had the hair for it. You know, I was like, I was like that in high school though. I was like that, like I was 17, 18. I started shaving my head. So I was like, oh yeah, yeah, I can wear Fred Perry's and boots.
Nice.
And, but I was kind of my first high school band, we all wore suits. So
sure.
I would go to ska shows in the late 90s and mid 90s, late 90s, and kind of wear suits. So yeah, I guess I did dress it, but definitely don't do that. Now I wear more like New Balances and Adidas.
My buddy and I in 97, Ska Vuvi and the Epitones came to Iowa City. And so we drove down, we wanted to go. So we went to Goodwill and we bought suits. But I'm 6'5", and like you can't.
Oh,
it's hard enough to get a suit at Goodwill, but for a 6'5" guy, so I look like Urkel. You know what I mean? Just like up to my shins. And we went there and we had a blast and we just danced around. And then the band talked to us because I think they just appreciated that we dressed up, you know, and as best we could. And then a bunch of girls, because Ska Vuvi had like 9 members, and we went to the bar and the girls thought we were in the band because we were wearing suits. And they were like, oh, you should keep playing. You were so good. I'm like, oh, I'm tired. Yeah, thank you. And then in college, that was college. But yeah, in college, I normally just dress like a normal person. I was never much to like look like a punk or anything like that. But one year I was like, you know what? I am going to do that. And so I had a dog collar and I had a white shirt that had the NBA logo, but it said ska. And I was wearing one of those like old man ska hats. Like we used to call them
ska
flat caps. Stanleys. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever, but yeah, not the pork pie, but the flat sand. And I was in the dormitory. I was in the dorm and I was getting food. And this girl walks up to me and looks me up and down and just goes, no, and then walked away.
That's like you get rejected even for you, like just from looks alone. That's crazy.
You weren't getting laid with the ska look.
No.
Even in 1997, even in the, of the commercial era for ska.
That's awesome. Yeah, the ska dad, like this whole podcast, we kind of started just to be like, you know, like all of us are coming in as kind of like the old men of or old person or old people of ska, because like, you know, there are so many new people coming into it, just discovering it now in like 2020s that we're like, we've been listening to this for 30 years now, or, you know, it's like, we're kind of like, not really like get off my lawn, but, I don't know where we quite sit, but the whole concept of us starting this show was kind of just being like, you know, like we love that. We used to go to those shows like Ska Vuvi and the Epitones. We were in high school and that stuff still stuff we love. And they're actually coming up with some new live albums, I think coming up, and they just reissued some stuff on Bandcamp too. So
nice.
Yeah. So they were one of my favorite bands to see, because like you were saying, they had like 9, 10, 11 people. You never knew like how many different horn players they were going to have, like when they came to your town. And my one buddy used to love their version of like Aquaman. They played like, I think it was second album, but like they were one of those bands, like they had a singer, but he would be toasting and like dancing the whole time. So it was just like, it was so surreal to see them on stage, cause it was like an orchestra, you know, it was like, so crazy.
My friends used to get me drunk, which wasn't hard back then. And, make me, do the scat part from She Sure Can Cook.
Yeah. I love that song.
I had it memorized.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like those bands, and I don't know if you ever got a chance to see the Scofflaws. They were like one of my favorite bands. You mentioned
I did see them. I saw them in '95, I think.
Yeah, and the one guy, the only guy who's left is Sammy Brooks. And when they played Supernova this year, and I saw him at a brewery last summer in New Jersey, and they were so amazing. And Sammy's like the oldest guy in the band. It's all these younger people around him, and he's just nuts the whole time. Like he's
like the Temptations, where there's like one old guy and the rest are 30. Yeah. And you're like, those are not original members.
Yeah, yeah. But you don't need that. You know, they're still playing the same songs, and they're doing like the Pee Wee Herman song, that song, and the William Shatner, all that stuff. And just to see that on stage playing live, it's just like it brings back a lot of memories for me, too.
They were so good. I went to that show. I learned a valuable lesson. I had a backpack with a bunch of like punk pins on the back of it. And I went and skanked with my backpack. And when I got done, 90% of them were missing. And then the ones that were there had like pins sticking out. So I was just making people bleed everywhere.
Oh, no. I was thinking people don't make those pins anymore. And the same with the patches. I just remember back in the 90s, everyone had like the bomber jackets with patches and the pins and those 1-inch pins. Like people don't do that anymore. That'd be a good way to market yourself as a comedian is to bring back those pins. You know, that could be a great merchandise. Do you have any merch? Like you mentioned, you have some specials and everything, but do you have CDs or shirts?
I have CDs. Yeah. Cause I have a couple albums on, what used to be called Rooftop, but he changed it to Blonde Medicine. But those, you know, a lot of people buy them, it's on Spotify, online and stuff like that. But I do sell some CDs left, like on cruises and stuff like that. I sell shirts. Like that's what most comics do is sell shirts on the road. But sometimes it can be arduous if you're on a plane to bring a box of shirts or a suitcase. It's a pain in the ass. But I mean, when I was new, like now I'm a headliner and I'm a pro comic. But when you're new. Like I remember when I first figured out like selling shirts, it was like the difference between like waking up in the middle of the night going, oh no, or not. You know what I mean? Like it made all the difference because when you're new, you don't make a lot of money, you know? And it's tough. It's tough to survive, you know? But at least I'm not Scavooby and have to split it 11 ways.
Yeah, you're army of one. But I'm sure that's so cool. It's really interesting to me to hear about you identifying as like a middle class, working class comic, because like it's amazing that like I'm sure it's a lot of hustle that takes and a lot of push from you to like to do all the events that you do and do all the traveling. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's like constantly reapplying for the same job over and over again. Like you go and you do a gig and then you gotta start emailing again to get back in, you know? And like I do have some agents for certain things, like the cruise. I have a cruise agent that just does that, you know? So, yeah. I mean, there are some elements that I'm like, okay, I finally can just chill on that. But it is. And when I started, man, I used to save a month in advance because I was so paranoid of everything falling apart. So I would like pay all my bills if it was February, I'd pay all the bills for March already. Just in case I made zero money, you know, and something went wrong. And so there's a reason why I'm bald.
The worry. Yeah. Oh man. But yeah, man, I'm really great to have you on. Really great to talk. Like I love talking about something I'm not familiar with and like learning about it. On the last episode we had a comic book artist. So I'm trying to expand my world of knowledge. So
I listened to that one. That was cool. I have a friend who's he's Elliot Ray Hall, and he was a comedian in Minneapolis, and now he's been writing for like Dark Horse and stuff like that, comics and stuff. Cool. And I think he's doing really well. So it's cool. It's cool. You meet in comedy, either, you know, there's professional full-time comics, but a lot of people have jobs. And so it's kind of cool because you meet people from all these different walks of life. And then sometimes I'll be like, I need to find somebody who knows how to gold mine, you know, or something. I'll be like, I'm sure I'll just put out a Facebook post. Somebody from the 8 million people I know is a part-time gold miner. And they always are. So it's kind of like a nice resource.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and it's also great having someone else who does a podcast too. Like, cause I'm always like, you know, I listen to different, you know, all these different kinds of podcasts. I'm like, how can I get my show better? And I really appreciate having, you know, another podcaster on to kind of just like, you know, listen to your show, but also like, hear your perspective on things too. I always think that builds your knowledge too of being out of like your comfort zone. So yeah, thank you again for doing the show, and hopefully I'll try to come the next time you're in DC or in Baltimore or something. It'd be great to see you.
Yeah, my schedule's on mikebrody.com. So sweet. There you go. Awesome. Promotion. I'm still grinding.
Yes, still awesome.
Well, I stumbled at 2 a.m. all drunk and full of smoke. My wife said I have had enough. That said I'm sick. Get out. So I stumbled down to Kelly's pub across the edge of town. And I told the boys my story, and we had another round. Got some sleep. Oh, drink it, drink it, drink it, drink it.